Hello and welcome to our Secular Overeaters podcast series, where you'll hear from speakers who have found recovery from food and other addictions without God. For additional information, go to secularovereaters.org. And now let's get to today's podcast.
Welcome everyone to the Secular Overeaters Dialectical Behavior Therapy Skills Workshop. My name is Shirley. I am a recovering compulsive overeater, currently located in New Jersey, and my gender pronouns are she, her. Susan P., who has been a CBT, or cognitive behavioral therapist, for 36 years, and a dialectical behavioral therapy therapist for over 10 years. She says that she uses DBT skills herself every day and can't wait to teach other OA fellows what has been so helpful to her and her clients. So, Susan?
Hi, everybody. So excited that you're here. I can't wait to teach you about this. DBT has been around since about 1992, and it is a form of cognitive behavioral therapy. But if you know anything about CBT, it kind of starts with thoughts. Let's work on your thoughts. But DBT starts with feelings. Right? Let's work on our feelings, which I think is so relevant to us because so many of us deal with our feelings by eating so that we don't have to feel them or don't have to manage them, right? It works pretty well in the moment, but most of the time has negative consequences and doesn't actually solve any problems. And so what DBT does is help you really manage strong emotions that are getting you in trouble, right? The other thing that it does and why it's called dialectical behavior therapy is because it gets rid of black and white thinking, right? Either or black and white thinking. And so the dialectic part means that that things can seem opposed to each other, but they may not be. And so here's an example of dialectical thinking, not black and white thinking. Someone can hurt my feelings and still care about me. I can mess up my program and still be working hard. I can mess up my program and still be worth something, so that two seemingly opposing things aren't really opposing. And I think it can help us from reacting in an extreme way to things. So that's why it's called dialectical behavior therapy. There's also a strong dialectic between acceptance and change, which means that sometimes we can't change things. We have to accept them. And then how do we cope with that? And then sometimes we can change things. And how do we recognize that? That sounds suspiciously like the Serenity Prayer, right? So I've always thought that it worked. DBT works really, really well with OA. All right. So the first thing I want to talk about, and I'm actually going to share my screen, which means I won't be able to see you all. So that makes me a little uncomfortable, but we'll do our best. Okay. So I want to talk about DBT and feelings. DBT very, very strongly emphasizes the idea that your feelings are valid. They matter. They're all acceptable. They give us important information. And no matter what they are, we don't have to feel guilty about them or bad about them, because guess what? We don't choose them. We don't choose our feelings. We don't choose the initial sort of thoughts. They just come. And the idea is pay attention to them because they give you really important information. You may not want to do what they tell you to do. You don't know. You can choose your actions, but since you don't choose your thoughts and your feelings, they're there for a reason. Pay attention to them. All right. I want to tell you a story. And if you're my sponsee, don't get nervous. I'm not going anywhere. But I want to tell you the story. All right. And it's a time when I use RAIN meditation. And it was only 2 weeks ago. Even though I've been a therapist for 1,000 years, sometimes I'm not great at figuring out what I'm feeling. And so I had this strong impulse 2 weeks ago to quit OA. I'm quitting OA. It's too stressful. I don't want to do it. I don't need it. Okay. And then I went through this process and it actually made me laugh at the end because it was kind of ridiculous. But RAIN helped me recognize what you're feeling. So I recognized I was feeling something. And I allowed myself to feel that way. Okay, you're feeling that way. But let's take a look at it, which is the I. We'll go through this again, don't worry. Investigate with kind and gentle curiosity. What is this feeling about? So I stopped to ask myself some questions. What don't you like about OA? I love the meetings. Every meeting I go to, I get something out of. I look forward to the meetings. So it's not the meetings. Is it my sponsees? Nope. Look forward to my calls with my sponsees. So it's not that. Is it my sponsor? Yes. I am not happy about my sponsor. This is just the initial thought. I don't want to deal with her anymore. Maybe I can get a different one. Maybe I don't need a sponsor. And then I investigated that a little further. But wait a second. I really, really love her. She's awesome. She's not a therapist, but she could be. Like, she's amazing. So what is it? What is going on? And then you know what it was? I finally had the answer. We talk on the phone. I hate talking on the phone. I dread talking on the phone. I have ADHD. I don't, it's just really, really hard for me. And so I had my answer. And you know what I did? I asked her if we could do Zoom. And she said yes. And the problem was solved. But if I hadn't used Rain, maybe I would have quit. Maybe I would have, right? Maybe I would have reacted. That initial feeling I was having of dread about it, maybe I would have reacted to it. So Rain meditation is an important first step. Let's take a little look at it. Okay. The R stands for recognize. Pay attention to what you're feeling. Sometimes we don't know. So what I want you to do is to think about the idea that most feelings you feel in your body first. Okay. Not everybody does, though. Let me back up. For some people, especially with people with trauma histories, they may not get signals from their bodies because they're sort of dissociated from it. And so other things to pay attention to, where it may be racing thoughts when you're having a strong emotion, or it may be a feeling of unreality or dissociation. But what I want you to do is close your eyes. This is just a brief exercise. Close your eyes. Think about the last time you were angry. Concentrate on that and pay attention to what you're experiencing in your body. I'll just give you about 30 more seconds. What does that feel like? Okay. For me, it's a tightness in my stomach. The minute I get that feeling, I know that I have to pay attention to it, right? That's my early warning sign when they were thinking about the strong emotion of anger. Okay. All right. So that's your early warning sign. That's when you recognize. And by the way, the quicker you notice it, the easier it's going to be to control. All right. So recognize what you're feeling. That doesn't mean identify the emotion. We're not there yet, but recognize that you're feeling something. Okay. Then the A is allow it, whatever it is. Right? You're allowed to have it. You didn't choose it. I know so many people feel guilty about their feelings. I shouldn't feel that way. Why? Who says? Do you know that research shows that people have around 6,000 thoughts a day? Some people think it's more than that, but research is pretty clear that it's at least about 6,000 thoughts a day. Many of those are ones that you wouldn't want anyone to know, that you might think people would find unacceptable or that you find unacceptable. Don't worry about that. You're in good company because everybody's in the same boat. What matters is what you choose to do with the feelings, not that you're having them. All right. So please just allow yourself to feel whatever you're feeling. Then I's my favorite. That's my favorite step. Investigate with kind and gentle curiosity. For me, that's the what's that about? What's that about? And that's where you can figure stuff out like I did with my whole I'm quitting OA thing. And then N, right? Nurture. What do I need? My feelings are telling me something. My feelings matter. What do I need to feel better? So that's sort of the basic step. It's just understanding how you're feeling, because then you can figure out what to do about it. That doesn't involve eating. Okay. The first skill. To me, this skill is the secret to an effective life. If you can do this, you can do anything. Now, don't get upset if you feel like you can't do these things yet, because some of the things we're going to talk about after this will make this possible. But if you can do the stop skill, I think you can do anything. So stop stands for stop, right? Stop before you do anything. You recognize you're having a feeling. Before you do anything, stop. Don't just react. Take a deep breath if you need to. Take a step back. Freeze and decide that you're going to choose a response, not just react. Okay, all right, so that's the T. The O is observe. What are you feeling? What are you thinking? What's going on outside? If there are people involved, what do they look like, right? What's happening? What's the situation? And then the P is proceed mindfully. Make a choice. Don't just react. To me, this seems like the secret to an effective life, right? Choose a response. But it's not so easy sometimes to overcome very, very strong feelings. Again, easier said than done. So now we're going to talk about some things that will allow you to do that. Tip skills. These are skills that you probably don't need all the time. A few of us may, but most people don't need these all the time. But this is when the feelings are so strong that it's hard to make the decision to do stop. I am so upset. I'm so overwhelmed. My feelings are taking me over, and I know that I can't make a good decision. And so, tip skills, changing your body chemistry, can be really, really helpful. I think probably most people have heard of the fight or flight response, and that is the physiological response to the perception of danger. Right? It comes up when there's real danger, when something's happening. I remember experiencing the fight or flight response when I had a tire blowout on the highway on I-95, and the fight or flight response jumps in to make sure that you can respond quickly and well. And so, thank goodness there is a fight or flight response. But it also turns up when we perceive that there's some sort of threat or danger and it can get in our way. Okay. It makes our breathing increase, our heart rate increase, blood flows to arms and legs, stress hormones are released. And to be perfectly honest, you're not sort of thinking about what's the most effective thing I can do in this situation. So, tip skills, when you're really captured by your emotions, can turn that around. The T, everything's an acronym, by the way. Let me just back up and say DBT is based on acronyms because we want you to be able to remember them when you need them. All right. So the T stands for tip the temperature, right, of your face with cold water. When I'm teaching this in a group, I bring Ziploc bags to the session, or at least when we used to be in person. And then everybody would walk out to the water cooler and fill the bag with cold water. And come sit down and relax. And we take everybody's heart rate, how fast is your heart beating in a minute? Okay. And then put the bag on your temple or over your eye. And we do that for maybe a minute to 2 minutes. And after you take that away, we take your heart rate again. And believe it or not, it's going to be like 10 to 15 beats slower in the minute. It's kind of crazy how that works to slow things down, just cold water. And cold water is free. Right? You can get it most places. I've even had some people order cold packs to carry around with them in their bag so that they can pull it out when they need it, because that's really going to slow things down for you so that then you can make a calmer decision. The I stands for intense exercise. It doesn't have to be like you go for a run, although that's nice too, right? That could be helpful too. It could be that you do 10 jumping jacks or do some sit-ups or run in place or whatever you want. But we want you to get your heart rate up because, again, we're tipping your physiology. Cold water, I'm sorry, I didn't tell you this, slows down your heart rate. Intense exercise speeds it up, but that's okay. It produces a change and then allows you to, again, use the stop skill. Paced breathing is my favorite. You maybe didn't know it, which is the beauty of paced breathing. Nobody knows you're doing it. Jenny asked me at the beginning, like, are you nervous when you're speaking? And I said, no. But you know what? When everybody came on, I was like, oh no, what am I going to start with? And I got nervous. And so while the introductions were being done, I was doing paced breathing. And it always works. Paced breathing, if you're breathing from your abdomen, triggers the vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve shuts down the fight or flight response in your brain. So, in my mind, paced breathing is a magic technique to use. It's interesting when I teach people to do paced breathing because there are a lot of people who really sort of chest breathe. So, the breathing is like this when you're taking a deep breath, like that. That is not actually paced breathing. What you want it to do is you want it to be pretty gentle. It's almost as if a balloon is expanding in your abdomen on the inhale and then deflating on the exhale. So, do me a favor, everybody, put your hands on your abdomen. Okay. Let me give you your instructions first. Take a nice, slow, deep breath in. I like to do it through my nose, but it doesn't matter that much. And then a nice slow exhale, again, gentle. We're not pushing anything, very gentle. All right. If you can, make your exhale longer than your inhale. And the reason we do this is because the part of the brain that mediates the inhale, believe it or not, is the rev up system of the brain. The part that mediates relaxation is on happens on the exhale. Okay. So my favorite ratio, but you might have to work up to this, is 5 and 10. I like to inhale 5 and exhale to a count of 10. And I do this every day. I have midfoot arthritis, believe it or not. So I have to stretch my foot every single day, which is boring to me, right? And so I just pair it with four of these long breaths. So the more you can practice, the more automatic will be and the more it will be there when you need it. All right, everybody, hands on your abdomen. Let's do an easy ratio, I think, but if you can't, that's okay. Take a nice low inhale for 4, 2, 3, 4, and let's exhale 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Set your own ratio though. Do what you can. Do me a favor, do 2 more breaths on your own. Nice job, everybody. I didn't see shoulders moving, which is the telltale sign of chest breathing. And I didn't see anybody forcing it. So beautiful. The more you can do this, maybe 2 minutes a day, the more it will be there for when you need it. And like I said, it's the quickest way to calm things down. Okay. And then there's paired muscle relaxation. You can pair where you tense and release muscles with your breathing. I'm not going to teach you that because I hate that. I don't like muscle relaxation. It makes me tense. But if some of you love it, that's fantastic. Good for you. Okay. So, all right. So this
Susan,
is from-
there was a just a quick question where somebody wanted to know if you breathe through your nose or your mouth.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't actually matter. I breathe in through my nose and out through my mouth. But the research doesn't show that there is a big difference in how you're going to do that. And some people have trouble breathing in through their nose. They, you know, for whatever reason, they can't. So I don't want you to worry so much about that. Okay. All right. So that's tip skills. Now we're going into strategies for ways to not eat when you're feeling strong emotions. This works for me a lot of the time. Instead of eating, you're going to do a distraction strategy. And some people ask about distraction. They say, well, isn't distraction bad? Like for years, I've been a procrastinator and all I do is distract myself. It's a very good question. Back, you know, when I was working on my dissertation 30 years ago, I distracted my way to taking 2 years longer than it had to. I just distracted myself because I was so anxious about it, right? And so isn't that bad? Like, isn't distraction bad? Well, it can be. The question we ask ourselves is, okay, is this helping me achieve my goals or not, right? And DBT talks about that as effectiveness. In DBT, effectiveness is defined as something that takes you closer to your goals or is consistent with your goals. And something that's ineffective is something that takes you away from your goals. DBT never talks about bad or good or right or wrong. It talks about effectiveness, okay? So if using a distraction strategies is taking you further away from your goals, it's ineffective. If it's taking you closer to your goals, it's effective. So that's something to be aware of, okay? I have a brilliant client who's like a chess master. He's a young guy, he's in college, and he plays chess and he feels good about himself and he doesn't feel anxious and he doesn't do schoolwork because he's playing chess. It's not effective. For me, if I'm starting to feel bored with something that I have to do, sometimes people ask me to write things and I find writing to be anxiety provoking. And so I work in small amounts of time and play a game of Candy Crush in between. It keeps me going. I don't play more than one game though. And a game is like 2 to 5 minutes. So for me, it's effective. Okay. It keeps me from avoiding. When I'm feeling the urge to eat something, I listen to an audiobook. because that's just as reinforcing, I think, especially if it's a good book. So think about it. What are some healthy ways that you can distract yourself when you're having an urge that won't take you away from your goals? Right. Activities is a great one. This is A. It's an acronym, ACCEPTS, right? Okay. It's an acronym. So the first one is called activities. I don't think I'm going to go through all of them, but we'll go through some. Okay. Activities is a great one. Identify what you can do to distract yourself when you're having an urge. What is engaging enough? What is reinforcing enough, right? What makes you feel good about yourself? That's pretty quick, right? And that will be helpful here. One of the things I wanted to tell you is back in the old days, before smartphones, when I would work with people, right, I'd have them get an index card box, and that was their toolbox. And then they'd write the strategies that they like on index cards and keep them in the box. And then when they needed them, they could open their box and pull out a strategy. So it's one of the things I want you to think about is which of the tools I'm teaching you do you want to keep in your OA toolbox? You can do it the old-fashioned way. You can have it on your phone. You can make wallpaper on your phone just to remind yourself what to do in the heat of the moment. And so with activities, what can you do that will grab your attention away? Have two or three of these that you can turn to. Contributing is my favorite. I like this one. When you're feeling an urge or you're feeling really upset, what can you do to make somebody else feel better? What is it to send a text, a nice text to somebody? Is it to send them a gift? Is it to go help somebody, you know, do a random act of kindness? Is it some volunteer activities you like? There is nothing for me that shifts my attention more than contributing. I'll tell you a quick story. Almost every year, a younger colleague and I presented at a big national conference, right? The trauma treatment that we do and teach to others. And one year, it was a few years ago, pre-COVID, I guess, I was sick. I had been sick for 2 weeks and I almost didn't go, but then I went. And I was comforting myself with this idea. Well, nobody's going to come. It's 3:30 on a Friday afternoon. No one's coming. And everybody came. Even people I knew, people were sitting on the floor. They were lining the walls. Oh my goodness. And I did not do that. I was not happy with my performance. I was off because I was sick. And my younger colleague, who'd always been sort of presenter, did amazing. She was awesome. She was so great. She was warm. She was interesting. And so I was feeling terrible when I went up to my room at the hotel afterwards. I was feeling awful about myself and beating myself up and feeling embarrassed about it. And so I decided, okay, practice what you preach. And so I decided to text my younger colleague and to tell her how impressed I was and how amazing she had been and how proud I was of her. And she was thankful, of course, but I felt so much better, so much better. And then it helped me realize, I hope this isn't bragging, but it helped me realize that after the presentation, somebody from a publishing company, one of the major psychology book publishers, came up and asked me if I would write a book about what we had just been talking about. And so it must have not been that bad. Now, I would rather do anything than write a book. So do that. To me, that would be a nightmare. But doing the contributing helped me come back to sort of reality about what was happening here. So it's one of my favorites. One that I also love, I love them all, by the way, but with other sensations. This is down at the bottom. I want each of you in your toolbox to have something in each channel, each sensory channel. So something you can smell that is going to make you feel good. I have lavender hand cream. Something that you can see. Above the chair where my clients sit, I have this adorable painting of three dogs on a bicycle. Sounds crazy, but I love it, right? I also have a picture of my husband. I want there to be something that you can feel. Something that you can touch. Oh, I just said touch. Something you can feel. Something you can listen to. It can be nature sounds, or I would challenge all of you to make yourself a relaxing or something that's fun playlist on your phones of music that you can listen to, right? Something in all the senses have in your toolbox. If anybody has a dog, oh my goodness, I just love the way it smells, their paws smell. If you don't know, They smell like either Fritos or popcorn, depending on what kind of yeast microbes they're growing between their pads, because that's what that is. But it's the most calming smell, I think. So I want you to have that in your toolbox. What are some things that you can actually distract yourself with that aren't unhealthy, right? That are effective, but you've got to have them ready. You're not going to run around the house at, in you know, like in the heat of the moment. You should have it ready for yourself. All right. Improving the moment, another set of skills that you can use. Imagery is a good one. Can you use imagery to change the way that you're feeling? And yes, you can. I tend to use imagery because I'm not particularly visual, really, but only in the most extreme situations, which for me are the dentist chair. I take myself on a mental vacation. And I would like to take you on a mental vacation if that's okay. So if you are willing, close your eyes. If you're not, that's okay. We can do this with your eyes open. That's all right. We're going to take a mental vacation. This is an imagery technique that at least I find very, very soothing. So imagine a place that you have been and loved, or that you would like, maybe you've never been there, but you would like to go. Take a deep breath. Put yourself in this place. And the first thing I want you to do is to imagine what it would smell like in this place. What does this place smell like? And in this place, what do you think the air would feel like on your skin? What would you be seeing? And what would you be hearing? And if it were time to eat or drink, what would you be tasting? Take another nice deep breath. And when you're ready, come back to where you are now and open your eyes. I like this one because it involves the five senses. And I start with smell. You don't have to, but I start with smell because the part of your brain that processes smell is very close to the part with emotions. So it's easy to trigger positive, good emotions by thinking about smell. So imagery, there's all kinds of other imageries. Imagine yourself in a safe place, or imagine the situation going well in the future. So imagery can be really helpful in the moment to shift the way that you're thinking and feeling. My absolute favorite is with meaning. I'm a big one of meaning, which means that, okay, something bad is happening, but is there some meaning that comes from this? Is there a silver lining? Is there a way to make lemonade out of lemons? So this one's important to me. And as a therapist and a trauma therapist, for me, anytime something bad has happened to me, I experience something traumatic, or I have a bout with depression, or I go through a divorce, something like that. Those things can be really hard, but they're also something that I call clinical gifts. They are clinical gifts. They make me a better therapist, right? While I don't have to experience everything my clients experience in order to be helpful for them, having those experiences gives me a deeper understanding, and I think makes me more effective. So that's a silver lining, right? Or making lemonade out of lemons, is that there is something positive that comes out of hard situations for me. The other thing I like to do is not negate the negative aspect of situations. That's unrealistic. I don't think that's necessary. I don't think anybody has to deny the negative or only look at the positive. That doesn't make sense to me. But sometimes people almost refuse to look at the positive aspect of something, as if it somehow negates the negative experience, which it really doesn't do. It's just a more full picture. Back to dialectics, something bad can happen and something good can come out of it. Or with many bad situations, there are some positive things too. So With meaning is to identify for me the at least statement. Well, at least, right? Well, this bad thing happened, and at least this came out of it. I have a daughter who's in college, but one time, or more, many times actually, I've heard her say, she tells me about something distressing that happened, and then she says, well, at least, and I know I've done my job. Thank goodness she's able to do that. She's able to identify the positive that can come from negative situations, and I feel good about that. With prayer, and I know we're secular OA, so it doesn't have to be prayer. It can be meditation. It can be my higher power is wise mind, right? My sort of inner wisdom is my higher power. So we can talk to that. And paying attention to one thing in the moment, just pay attention to what's in front of you. I'm not doing all of them, by the way. But I do want to talk about with self-encouragement, right? And rethinking the situation, we can be our own cheerleaders. And I know it maybe sounds silly, but whenever I do something that I'm proud of, I tell myself I'm awesome. I even say it from the outside, like, you're awesome. That was awesome. Like I cheer myself on. I can be kind of a perfectionist and hard on myself, certainly in the past, but not so much anymore. Just give, you know, it's okay. Praise yourself. I think that's really great. I also want you to have some maybe sayings that will help you going forward and put those in your toolbox. A big one for me is, I have a lot of them, but one of my favorites is, there are no mistakes, only learning opportunities. I love that one. So instead of dwelling on mistakes I've made, I think about what did I learn from it. Another favorite is, what goes around comes around. Which to me tells me, you know what, I don't have to get revenge on anybody, right? It'll happen. If people are like rude or mean, believe me, there'll be some time in the future where they won't get what they need from others. And if people are kind and wonderful, then their people will be there for them. So I don't have to worry about revenge. I'll let the universe take that, right? I'm just going to worry about myself and think about that. So see if you can come up with a few things. One, something you can say to yourself to say that you're awesome. Right? Doesn't have to be those words. And some other things that'll help you get through some difficult times. So put that in your toolbox. We have a little time. Write down, maybe take 2 minutes. I'm going to watch the clock. Take 2 minutes to write down some cheerleading or helpful statements to yourself. Anybody want to share one that you came up with?
I came up with a couple for myself. Nothing super original, but I'm like, you're a badass. 'Cause I like being like a little, rebellious, but like successfully rebellious. So I like that one. And then I also like referring to myself by my last name. For some reason, that sounds stronger. So those are two that I thought about.
I'd love it. Anybody else? Tell us. Oh, I see some good ones in the chat. Those are great, right? I've survived everything I've ever been through because you're here, right? I know I can do this. I am strong and worthy of a peaceful mind. I love that, Scarlett. And then Mercy put, you kept calm and carried on. Nadine, tell us.
Well, I used to have an extremely stressful job that I really hated going to, and it was unbelievably stressful, like the worst job you could ever picture having. And I had to stay there for financial reasons. And so every time I'm in a stressful situation, I think, well, at least I'm not there. It can't be as bad as that. Like nothing could ever be as bad as that job. So
Right.
I always say, at least I'm not waking up today to go there, and it makes the day a lot better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it reminds me, Nadine, that one of my favorites I forgot to tell you is this could be so much worse. Right? Like I figured out how this could be worse and it makes me feel better. All right. These are from DBT specific distress tolerance skills, right? When the issue is addiction. These are great. One of my favorites is alternate rebellion. Let me tell you why I like this one so much. Much of my eating used to be about rebelling. Like, oh, that seems that like it doesn't make much sense. Who am I rebelling against? And so I did RAIN a long time ago and figured it out. And I was rebelling, number one, against my mother because weight, how much we weighed, was a really important thing to her. And so I have two sisters, we're all struggling with compulsive overeating. And so this gives me a chance to sort of rebel against my mother. Doesn't make any sense, I know, but that's where it comes from. Sometimes our feelings, right, don't fit the situation, but they're valid and we have to pay attention to them. And the other thing that I'm rebelling against is society. I hope people don't mind if I curse, but I'm often thinking, if you don't like the way I look, fuck you, right? People don't need to say to have a say on the way that I look. And so sometimes my eating is about rebellion, but that is a counter to my goals, right? I actually don't want to do that. And so you can find ways of rebelling that don't hurt you or anybody else. So alternate rebellion is finding a way when you're feeling rebellious that you can rebel safely, right? Without hurting yourself or others. And so I have to show you my newest way. I just got this and I like it. Thinking it's so easy. Do you see my middle finger necklace? I ordered this on Amazon. I keep it under my shirt. And when somebody annoys me, I feel it. And I'm saying something very bad to them, but they don't know it. And I don't have to feel bad about it, right? Right? Got this right on Amazon. I'm not trying to sell anything. I'm just saying, here's my form of alternate rebellion. Find a way to rebel. That hurts nobody, right? Nobody sees it. Nobody knows I'm doing it, right? My 87-year-old mom lives downstairs. And she had a sort of serious medical episode throughout the entire summer and into the fall. And when we finally got her home, she lives here. When we finally got her home, she was just ordering me around all day long. Do this, do that. No, thank you. No, nothing. Right. Just like do this, do that. And, you know, my mom can be difficult, but I don't want to be rude to her or mean to her. And plus she just had a medical thing. And so this necklace got me through. I could just feel it. Right. When she was doing that. And it's not consistent with my values to be unkind to her. I just can't, right? It's not consistent with my values, but boy, did this help me get through. So alternate rebellion, all right? The last thing I want to talk to is adaptive denial. This is controversial, this one, right? And what the saying is, almost the opposite of before, which is accept your feelings. This is in the heat of the moment, deny that you are feeling the urge. Deny it. Don't accept it. I refuse to accept this. Make believe you're not having it. It seems, like I said, sort of counterintuitive, but can be really, really helpful. Just tell yourself, nope, you're fine. You're not feeling anything. I don't know how I feel about this one. This is not one I use myself because I actually like to pay attention to my feelings and respect them. But I know people who find this one very, very helpful. All right. So this is something that you can try out. It's just like, tell yourself, no, you're fine. You're not feeling it. And I think it's worth a try. Okay. All right. I am through 3 minutes earlier than I thought. So we have a little bit more time for questions. Do we want people to click the raise hands on the response?
I think that's what we're going to do. You know, thank you so much, Susan. If we could just give her a round of silent Zoom applause. Because this has been a lot of really good and useful information. As was just said, this next component of our presentation is set aside for some questions, answers, and shares. If you have a question, I'm going to call on you. Oh, they're just popping up like that. Okay. So, Penny, I saw yours first. Would you like to unmute?
Yeah, I was wondering if Susan had any suggestions. You restrict your anorexic. So, it's not a matter of getting away from the food, distracting myself, because that's what I do, but that's no good. So Any suggestions for that for DBT?
Sure. So let's go back to the rain. My guess is that restricting is often preceded by some sort of emotion. Does that ring true?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. All right. So then you identify the emotion. And see if there's any other way to make you feel better other than restricting. Sometimes restricting is about anxiety and overcome the anxiety through taking control. Does that ring true also?
It's like, yeah, control of the things that I can't control.
Exactly.
Control of a life.
That's right. And that, you know, like, again, I'm going to validate those feelings. The feelings make sense. Right. But the method we choose to feel better about them is, again, not effective because it's hurting you in some way. And so let's see if we can get that need to control or to feel less anxious covered with some of these other strategies. OK,
Thank you so much.
So, Andrew?
Yeah, I have a quick comment and then a question. So for the tip of the temperature, I'm kind of embarrassed to say this, but I found through TikTok people putting their face in ice water. And so I've been doing that, and it's been really helpful.
Yeah.
But holding my breath made me anxious. And so to make it more acceptable, I actually bought a snorkel.
Okay.
So I can keep my face under water and still not have to worry about breathing.
What a great adaptation. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you could do it. And I know a lot of people who get a bowl of ice water and put their face in it. But I wanted to go with something that was a little bit more accessible. But
yeah, it's extreme. Sure. My question, and I think, you know, you already pointed out some good strategies. I struggle with nighttime eating where I'm not sure if I am really not conscious or I kind of create this, you know, space where I don't have accountability. And so like sometimes I'll just be eating and then I'll kind of like wake up. And so
Are you taking sleep medication?
No.
Okay. Cause sometimes that happens.
No, it's been a problem for me for a while. But I think something like, you know, smelling would be good to kind of basically like wake myself up. I get to use the restroom and then I'm like, oh, feelings. And then I just find myself eating. So like, are there other things other than like maybe getting like an essential oil or something like to smell that might be helpful that you could recommend?
Yeah, absolutely. But I also want you to think about, and this is called burning bridges in DBT. I didn't cover, but it's called burning bridges. Is there a way to make it harder for you to eat at night that you can set up ahead of time that can prevent it?
Okay.
Right? Like where the food is there a sign you can put on it or to make it a little harder to reach it or something like that? Right? And that's called burning bridges to a behavior that you don't want to do.
I see that Rory has their hand up.
Hi, Rory.
Hello. Hi. Not a question as such, but just wanted to say thank you for explaining why we use so many acronyms in CBT, DBT. I do smart recovery, and I've never known as much acronyms in my life, and it was really driving me mad. And it's just so, and no one ever explained that the reason we have them is just they're easier to remember. I feel a little bit silly actually, to be honest as well. It's because there's so many acronyms, and when we started the talk and I saw acronyms, I was like, oh my god, more acronyms! I'm gonna go mad with acronyms. But now I know why there's acronyms. It's just they're easier to remember. So thank you. And your talk was excellent. And I really found a lot of use in there. And I think CBT has, in a way, strangely brought me back to the fellowship now that I know that there's, you know, a secular community there. And CBT, I think, just works brilliantly with OA. It really does. And the thing that I don't get in, so it's smart recovery. I don't know if you've heard of smart recovery or not, but there's no real emphasis on fellowship in smart recovery. It's come in, get what you need, move along, you know. And I started doing smart and I was like, yeah, this really works, but I've missed something from OA in the fellowship, and now there's a way to kind of bridge it all together. So yeah, great talk. I really appreciate
it. I'm so glad. I totally agree. And I wanted to throw in that I've been a CBT and DBT therapist for so long, but it wasn't enough. I needed to come to OA because of the fellowship, and that's what made the difference. That's what put me into recovery. So I agree.
Yeah.
We can just do one more question. I see Jenny has her hand up.
Yeah, so this DBT stuff is just completely new to me, and I felt kind of overwhelmed by everything that was shown, all the, you know, sheets. What would be the place where I should start? Like, choose one thing. Like, where what would be a good thing to start with?
Okay. I think that there are amazing videos on YouTube about DBT and the individual DBT skills. And there's somebody called Shireen Rizvi, Rizvi, who makes wonderful short videos that you can get on YouTube. And that's probably a nice place to start. The other thing you'll find on YouTube is the person who made up DBT is called Marsha Linehan. And she was working with very suicidal people when she was an intern, like, you know, 30 years ago. And she has some nice videos explaining it too. That's a good place, I think.
I think One of the things that I really love about DBT, because I am not, I have not been doing it as long as Susan, but as a psychologist, is that there's so many DBT toys, and I like that. Like, I love having the DBT cards, you know, the dialectical behavioral therapy cards that divide the skills up, and then you can, you know, just to keep it fresh. And a lot of people have like to have something tangible. And back in the day, there, like she said, that as the clients would create like index cards, and now they're little index cards. And then there's like DBT workbooks.
There are DBT apps now that you can look up some of the skills. You know what I will, what I will do, I think, is put together a, oh, here we go. Put together a list. I don't have them here. And we'll send, is it okay if we send them out with the handouts, Jenny?
I already sent out the handouts, but what I'm thinking is we should put together something on our webpage. And I would like to get some, you know, recommendations for books, YouTube videos, apps, everything. Because I know a lot of this information is covered by a copyright. So we're not going to be able to post these, you know, the PDF that we shared today is not, we're not going to be able to keep that on our website. But if we can have other things on our website, that would be great.
Absolutely. So we'll send you a list of books and apps and resources.
Yeah. Because they're not expensive, the books. So that's something too. This, I think the skills workbook is about $13 and probably can get it 10. So they're not expensive, you know, support. So. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, thank you. Thank you, sorry. Hi, thank you so much for that. Question, what is the difference between CBT and DBT?
Okay. CBT is cognitive behavioral therapy, and DBT is a form of CBT, right? In fact, the first manual that came out was called Cognitive Behavioral Therapy for Borderline Personality Disorder. DBT is expanded past borderline personality disorder to all kinds of problems, but that was 1992. So it's a form of CBT. There's just more of an emphasis on emotions than you typically find.
Is Andrew, is that your hand?
Yeah, same question, but with ECT.
Oh, with ECT?
ACT.
Oh, ACT.
Yeah. I love acceptance ACT. And commitment therapy.
Acceptance and commitment therapy, right? Acceptance and commitment therapy is called the third wave cognitive behavioral therapy. It's a newer form of CBT that incorporates mindfulness. And then the other big difference is instead of challenging thoughts that are causing you distress, you distance from them. And the acceptance part comes from this idea that we all have challenges, right? Let's accept them and commit to pursuing valued action instead of letting them get in the way. So it's a newer form of CBT. I'm a big fan. I use that too.
Thank you so much. That was really insightful. I guess my question is, if you're somebody who sort of struggles to kind of connect to their body, how... I guess because I'm in therapy at the moment and I feel like I'm struggling to connect to what's happening in the sessions because I struggle with dissociation.
Sure.
I guess I just wondered if you had any tips for that. Like,
yeah, what I help my clients do is ground themselves. So have you learned any grounding strategies? Is that something you, a term you've heard before, Mars?
I have heard of it, but it's not something that I've practiced before. So,
okay, no. Grounding strategies are wonderful, and they help you sort of ground yourself in the present. And there's a couple of different kinds, right? My favorite is using your five senses to ground yourself and make sure you're present. And it's called 5-4-3-2-1, right? Mm-hmm. And I know that I don't have time to walk you through this one, but you identify five things you see, four things you hear, three things you feel in your body, two things you smell, and one thing you taste. It's just an exercise to get you grounded right here and kind of out of your head. There's other ones too, right? So that you can really pay attention to how your body feels in the chair. You have your feet on the floor. There are mental ones where you go through People, you know, like you go through people's birthdays in your family. There's lots of different strategies to get you out and grounded in the current moment. Those might help. It's, you can do a search on them, right? There's all kinds of different ones. And I think those help people, participate more in what's happening.
Yeah. One of the things that we didn't talk about much this time is that, you know, DBT has a grounding in mindfulness skills.
Yes. So
where you generally start as a, you know, as a client who is in a DBT therapy is learning mindfulness. When you say student, yeah.
Absolutely. It starts out, every group starts out with a mindfulness exercise. And every time we introduce a new set of skills, we always go back to mindfulness. So if this were a 2-hour workshop, we would have been doing more mindfulness. Rain is a mindfulness exercise, right? And so you actually, it's very difficult to use any of the other DBT skills if you haven't practiced mindfulness. So actually, what a good point. I think it's the basis of DBT. And DBT talks about mindfulness. The definition of mindfulness in DBT is awareness, right? It doesn't mean meditation necessarily. There are mindfulness exercises, but the idea is awareness, right? How do we become more aware of what we're feeling, what we're experiencing, or what's happening outside of us if that's what we want to be participating in? And it can be hard, right? And so we, like I said, every class starts with a mindfulness exercise. And every new set of skills you don't start it until you do a review of mindfulness skills. And I use those videos when I'm teaching. They're wonderful.
Good tip. I don't. And now I will. Thanks. I love those kind of shortcuts. Thank you. The way to reinforce the behaviors in a way that everybody has access to. It's wonderful. Yeah.
And thank you very much. This was really, it's a little overwhelming because there was so much information, and someone asked the question at the end about, you know, accessing YouTube videos and, you know, just taking it one step at a time. And I also like that you said, you can't do all of this at once. Right. So just get your own toolbox. So I appreciate that approach. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Yeah. I the goal here was in part to let people know that this exists, right? This whole area that, that, you know, we both found that a lot of people didn't even know this was there for them. Because not everybody is in therapy and not everybody is seeing a therapist who offers this type of work for them. So I'm excited that people have just one more, you know, thing that they can move towards to help them through their recovery. So it's pretty exciting. If you're in therapy, and can you ask your therapist if they know any DBT? And you can just ask them. Because more people have had training than actually practice it, is what I've been finding. But they may not. But this doesn't mean that you couldn't learn to practice the skills. So. And that's what Susan is trying to, by having this public event, is trying to help people see.
So a lot of us are compulsive eaters and, you know, we get stressed out and we just start going for the food. I'm assuming, I mean, looking just what I learned today, I'm supposed to put together a toolbox of things that I could be doing instead. But, you know, what are some practical ideas about that for all of us who, you know, are reaching for the food when we don't need to?
I think as much as possible, practice the stop skill and do it when it's easy so that when it's really hard, it's something that you know how to do already. And the stop skill says stop, take a deep breath, take a step back, observe, and then proceed mindfully. That's the most important thing. And then proceeding mindfully is up to you, right? What can you do? Do you want to substitute something else instead of eating or call somebody? Right? You want to take a tool out of your toolbox to use at that time. So I think the most important thing, though, is making the decision. And this has been hard for me, making the decision to do the effective thing, not what I feel like doing in the moment. So practice it when it's a little bit easier.
I love that, Susan. I love what you just said. You know, make the decision to practice the thing that is. I love that. I see that Janet has her hand up.
Yeah, I was just going to echo that, because I have been in recovery for 2 years, 2 months now from food addiction, and I'm in a really wonderful state of sobriety that just feels so fantastic. And the main thing I did was make the decision to start nurturing myself, serving myself with healthy food rather than all the toxic food that I'd been ingesting for so long. So making that decision was key. And I love that wording that you just said again, but I had written it down when you first said it. Effectiveness, it gets you toward your goals. And I didn't know about the acronym STOP, but for 2 years now, I've had this little stop sign. It's kind of like it comes up over my shoulder into my brain.
Yeah.
And it's a gentle, it's a little, you know, like stop sign, like we see on the street, but it's a gentle reminder, stop. I don't want to do that to myself. I choose something different.
That's right. Beautiful.
And then instead of whatever the food may be, I choose something different, or it's not really time to eat now. I'm not actually feeling true hunger pangs, so I will take a walk, knit, you know, whatever, all of the different options that serve me. So that mindfulness now is really, really enforced in my daily behavior. And it just feels fantastic. And I love all these tools that I can continue to use to reinforce that and change it up a little bit and
yeah,
keep it going.
I have to go, everybody, but it's been such a pleasure.
Bye, Susan. Have a good one. I wanted to thank you. I wanted to call people's attention. Jean made a post here about a recovery circle that some folks started, and it's a DBT recovery circle. But again, theirs is closed, of course, at this point. But she said these are the materials that she used for her the recovery circle. The DBT solution for emotional eating. Like I said, there's lots of toys out there, DBT toys. Oh, Jean, you popped on. So I didn't know if you weren't able to talk, but.
Yeah, I'll say something about it. Yeah, we went through the book in the fall, mm-hmm. and we decided we wanted to go through it again and take it slower. It's a small group. We've kind of gotten to know each other now. But I encourage other people to like, you know, find others, and you know, Secular OA is very generous with giving us a Zoom account to use. So it's, and I also want to say that the skills that Susan talked about today, she talked about some new ones that I wasn't familiar with, and she made it come alive for me. That's what I said in the chat, and she really added something to it. I'm sorry she's not here to hear that, but hope she will know that. Yeah. It made it even more exciting for me.
Are these grounding techniques as well? Or form of grounding?
Okay.
DBT.
DBT skills are, they're a variety of skills, and they do different things. Some of them are grounding techniques, right? And some of them are, you know, expanding, you know, your ability to communicate or express yourself in different ways. But yeah, some of them are grounding techniques. But grounding technique is just a category of things.
But yes, I am looking for more concrete, you know, and really to learn about what is grounding. Yeah.
So yeah, some of the techniques that she mentioned would fit that category of grounding techniques. Things that, you know, bring you back into your body and allow you to, you know, to carry forward in a way that is more helpful than harmful. So the ones that she gave you here, like the breathing technique, the counting, that your senses, those are in that category of grounding techniques. And if you were to just to try two or three of them, that would probably be best than like a whole laundry list. I would never give my clients like a zillion of them and go, just pick one or two and see. Now, Nadine also put here in the chat some free DBT worksheets to download and print at therapistaid.com. Oh, hi, Jean.
Yeah, I just want to make a suggestion that I don't take enough my own this suggestion I'm about to make, but I really like this idea, which is some of these DBT skills I think can be used at the, people can support each other to do together over the phone. The breathing together, you're doing some of the feel, the rain, or there's something in DBT called chain analysis. I've done that on the phone with people. It's really useful and it's very focused, and you kind of have a boundary, and it really helps to, as somebody else said, ground the skills, I think, to do that with somebody else. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jean. What a great select what a great suggestion. Perhaps with your accountability buddy, or friend who also just has an understanding of this. Or even someone who doesn't, who's willing to spend some time with you while you go through the process. Yeah. Janet.
Well, this makes me think also at the one of the appendixes to Stephen Porges, to Serge Prengel's book, The Proactive 12 Steps, which is an alternative 12 step book. In one of the appendixes, he has an interview with the psychologist Stephen Porges. And in that, Stephen Porges talks about the importance of self-regulation and how a human being really can't self-regulate until we've had co-regulation, which starts in the womb and then, ideally throughout childhood, having your needs met, being face to face with other humans, et cetera. And then we're adults now, we still need co-regulation from time to time in order to be able to regulate ourselves. And I really do agree with that idea. And a lot of the tools that Susan went through for us today sound to me a lot like self-regulation, the grounding, the using our senses, just calming down, taking a pause before responding. So I like the way that all kind of, what am I trying to say? The different approaches kind of validate each other here for me.
True. Yeah. It's true. And I think too, 'cause more much of the time people are taught the skills in a DBT group setting. So there's an opportunity to practice and get feedback from others and a connection to the skills and to other people. So yeah, I think Janet's point about how learning to self-regulate probably and I think Steve Porges talks about this a lot too, and there's research to support this. It's just having a mammal, it could be your dog, your cat, some furry being, to help you self-regulate is not a bad thing. And if you have a person, that's more the better. But it is hard to learn how to self-regulate before you've learned co-regulation skills.
Well, and I'll just say that's the beauty of secular overeaters for me is that I'm welcome to come into this community and go with the pace, go with the flow, listen to others, have my thoughts stimulated and my feelings, and then go off again and apply what I've learned. And it's just constantly reinforcing in a very safe and welcoming environment. So I'm really grateful.
Yeah, me too. And that we use, other materials. Like we accept that science is real, and I like that, I was thinking about like little things about the sensation and grounding techniques that are just some of them are so simple. You know, one of the things that I learned is that it feels good to me to feel my hair. It's like really soft and cottony. So when I'm feeling a certain way, just feeling my hair just makes me feel like I'm in my body and I'm here. And that would be an appropriate and simple grounding technique. And some people, I found clients who do that too, but they don't even have an awareness that they're doing that. It's just it's an unconscious habit that I'll help them bring into consciousness as a way of, you know, soothing the nervous system just a little bit. So, you know, there are things all around us all the time that are available to us. And, you know, like the breathing, because you always have your breath. So it'll be very exciting, I think, for any of you who actually decide to follow through like Jean did and use a book and have their circle go through the book together. I think it's just going to be a wonderful and amazing and fun thing for them to do to support their recovery. So I'm excited for you and I encourage you, and I'm just so grateful that Susan was willing to share this with all of us. That was just great. There's four different categories of DBT skills training. There's mindfulness, emotion, interpersonal effectiveness, and distress tolerance skills. And she gave us a mixture of them. I want to thank everyone for coming today. What an amazing, I'm so excited about the turnout we had. And again, a special thank you to Susan for sharing your expertise and the rest of the team, the workshop team, for your service in putting on this workshop.
Thank you for joining us today. If you'd like to support our efforts, please visit secularovereaters.org and consider making a donation.